When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Like to apologize
for what?
To absolutely no one. The two-time champ does absolutely.
Okay, we are live.
Made in Champ podcast. Gonna get the aliases off. Didn't do it in the last episode, but I am two dems. The real is back. The real is back.
Come on.
I am him. Himmy Neutron in the flesh.
He's him.
The best member of the Dark Skin Society. DK. What's his name? I ain't said his name.
Damson Idris.
Watch your back. We have a very, very special guest in the building. Special guest. Please get off your aliases as well. Yo, introduce yourself.
Mate, my aliases are nothing like yours. That was a self-introduction, if there was ever one. That was sick. Oh, my name is Warwin. That's it. Plain and simple. That's me.
Yeah, no, we love that. Sometimes plain and simple was the way to go.
Absolutely. I might need to follow your lead, though. That was sick.
Yeah.
I've got to start doing that.
No, for sure. Honestly, next time you come on, just have a bunch of names ready to go off.
Doesn't matter if it's true or not. Just
get them off. No, I was listening to it. Half of that don't sound true.
Cole Sanusi, Don Colon in the building, the one and only, AKA L. Coolins, AKA C-Note, AKA Hollywood Cole. We here, man.
Coming for you. We are indeed.
Right here, surround sound, smart speakers, portable speakers, you name it, we there.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 225, I think.
How 225? About it?
Yeah, sure.
Why not? Sure, why not?
Let's get it.
Oh, it's me.
Yes.
Oh, sorry, man. I'm just fixing the mic. It's Eman G45, the G solid in my name, the 45 is silent.
Come on.
It's Genghis Jibogwing. Eman Prime.
Eman Prime.
Yeah, that's another one, bro.
Yeah, we love it.
What else? Genghis Jibogwe, mm-hmm. Tinfoil Hat Eames, mm-hmm. Black Mama Dove, Chia Yam.
Yeah.
God is great, always. He's above all. Yeah, don't listen to TJ Jakes. Anyways, Wagwan. What are we saying?
What
Happy
we
New Year.
Happy New Year.
Indeed. Yeah. I didn't say on the second one, but yeah.
Happy 2024.
Yeah, 24.
Indeed.
We're here. So. Episode. Gone.
Let's go.
All right.
So we've got Warwin in the building. Thank you for coming on. I mean, this is a bit of a full circle moment. Cause
pretty much.
Yeah. We've known each other for several years. Mad?
So the first time I saw you, we were going to school and we're waiting for the bus. And the bus never came.
Do you know what? That's such a regular occurrence.
Yeah, the bus never
That's
came.
The most Shafford thing maybe ever.
That is standard, yeah.
We was both late. I think Mr. Stanlock was yelling at you, but like when I told him, like the bus never came. It was like, aight. This was another teacher, but I know Mr. Stanlock was yelling at you.
Probably.
Yeah.
That's not, you know what? That's not uncommon.
Shout out to Mr. Stanlock as well, but yeah.
I don't even remember. No, do you know what? So many people have like vivid memories of school. I cannot tell you a single thing.
Really?
I just blocked the whole of Chafford out of my mind. Like, I've got like core memories and like key bits, but nothing to do with actual like school.
Fair enough.
Crazy.
I was like, I'm done. You're never going to see me again.
Mm. So do you not speak to anyone from school or?
Actually, I've got like my group of friends. We're very close. There's like, three, we literally out yesterday, yeah.
Mm.
There's you know Bruno.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was literally with Bruno yesterday.
Man,
his
like,
brother Dan, we grew up together, and our other friend Lewis, and their wives.
That's
like my close circle.
Mm.
There's a few people from school, but I wasn't one of them people that like, even though my close circle was few,
mm.
but I was friends of everyone sort of thing.
Yeah.
no one was really doing clicks too much back then, but you definitely had your little pockets of people.
Well, your new group was weird because you
were so weird.
You only had yourselves in a sense because you had to keep going up. You were the first ever year, I want to say.
We were the second year. Okay, so which was even weirder. That's like, honestly, like when I talk to people that I've met just after school, just outside life, who have just gone to a traditional secondary school, it's just standard. I'm like, nah, we were weird. So I remember when we started, well, when they, like the first ever year seven, like literally school was built, boom, first year. That was my cousin, he was in that year. And they came to Tudor Court and all the other little primary schools in the area. And they literally asked the students, like, what do you want? Like, do you want to have a uniform? Do you want that and the other? So they got the choice. And they went with uniform. And I was like, bro, why'd you do that? Like, we had it. Like, but no, it was so many decisions were started, like, from, like, literally from the students and stuff. And there was, like, they made the whole thing about, I mean, this is, bearing in mind, this is 2001.
We could have had no uniform.
It was an option. But
they would have flipped that anyway.
I get it, because it was, at the time, it was quite a divisive area because you had Chafford, which is arguably more affluent, right next to like Stifford Clays
and these sort of things.
And then when you introduce that into a high school setting, now you've got, they basically tried to eliminate as much bullying off the set as they could.
Which was
the whole reason why we had smart cards and no money, because they were like, well, you can't get mugged for your smart cards. You know. So there were a lot of things like that. Smart cards are another one. And bearing in mind, this is 2001. They were talking about, every student's going to get a laptop. And
2001?
Yeah,
that's you went to second?
So I started 2002. Yeah. I was in year seven in 2002, so the first year group must have been 2001. And even back then, I remember there was a day, I think it was before you guys must have started, there was a power cut, and so all the smart boards died, so we literally couldn't do lessons. And my dad was going, don't they have a blackboard? I was like, no, it's a smart board. If there's no electricity,
there's no school.
So we got to go home early. It's like weird stuff like that. And I was like, so no one else had any of that. It was just us.
I do remember, like,
Friday. Oh, yeah, the Friday.
Did they still do the half Friday?
I don't think they ever got rid of that.
They still did that when we were
Even that was sick.
I mean, it stopped when it happened in sixth form.
Wait, were you the year group? Did you have to do sixth form?
No.
You didn't have to. But it was available.
We
didn't. We did. They did a weird experiment with us. So I did my A levels. I started my A levels in year 11.
What ones?
I did sociology, but they offered business as well. And I think that was it. Yeah, business studies or sociology. And so we did the AS level, which meant we could just do the second half of that when we got to Palmer's. Basically just do a year in college and then dip. But no one passed. Literally no one, not a single person.
I'm not surprised. You're not going to get year 11s to, on top of their GCSEs, to be able to do an AS.
There was a few.
Yeah, but like, they were exceptional. I think if he's saying no one passed, the people that I know that did A-levels at GCSE, that they were cut above the rest.
Right.
So it wasn't, they weren't just giving it to anyone. But it was a very unique experience growing up in Chafford. And I know the school especially was very experimental before we got there, which was interesting because you were our first year 11 in the sense that we were in year 7 when you got there.
That's crazy.
Or when you were there.
Yeah.
So I just have these, because you was really nice to us. Like, you know, as...
Yeah, because I can't say the same for other people.
Because
all I know is that year 11s were just evil deviants.
So do you know what? That's actually interesting you say that. So, like we're saying, I didn't have a year 11. I had a year 8 when I was there, and that was it.
That's crazy.
And the thing about me, and a lot of people... I mean, well... You knew me, like, so you can testify to this. Have I really changed in size since?
More or less,
I've basically, I remember the last time I remember, like, measuring myself like, well, the first time I've got a memory of it was, I know that in year seven, I was 5'3", which is like big for a kid. So when I went into year seven and started secondary school, the, like I said, there was just year eights and no one else. So a few of them tried to do that, oh, we're older than you, we're going to bully you thing. And I was like, bruv, I'm bigger than you already. Like, there's literally no, like, there was no threat because if we had year 11s, you're basically on your way to being a full grown man at that point.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
maybe
yeah.
there would have been some of that. But I think because I basically grew up never being successfully bullied. I was like, I joke all the time, like, especially in Chafford, like growing up in primary school, like you get kids that, you know, get it from their parents. They see a black kid, they're like, oh yeah, we're gonna pick on him. But in primary school, they were too stupid to realize that if you're bigger, that's not gonna work out. That's not gonna work out well for you. So I say I've never been successfully bullied. Like, people have like tried to pick on me because I'm different, but I've always been bigger and stronger. Yeah, oh well, I was born in New Cross, lived there till I was like three. We were like one of the first families to move into Chafford, like 94, 95.
Yeah, I didn't even know it was a thing. So you would have been there, and a lot of it still would have been a chalk quarry, wasn't it?
100%, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And you know what? It's annoying because I sound like all these old people that
get out of our area.
Not in that sense, not in that sense, no. No, literally, no. So my version of that is, so I used to work at the O2 Arena, and anytime someone over like 60 would be like, oh, I remember when all of East London was a dockland and all this, and like, okay, well, it's not anymore. Like, we built over it now. But that's literally me, like, where, so I'm like on the corner, like where sort of the Sand Martin is.
Have you been in that house since you were three? The one next to Jay.
So yeah, my family's been there like that whole
way. You've seen the development of
100%. So after
was
my
Lakeside
house,
even a thing?
Lakeside, so Lakeside actually came before Chafford. Lakeside was there, but there was nothing else around it. So where my house is, there was basically nothing until like, it was weird. So where the shops are, where like the Tesco and like the doctor's is, between my house and there was like nothing.
So I just used
to like ride my bike. Like, that's why I sound like an old person now. Cause I'm like, oh, I used to literally, there was just a massive like chalk hill and my mate lived at the bottom of that chalk hill. So I just get my bike and just like go all the way down that. Yeah. But now that is what is turned into like, I think it's Cumberland Road. All that was just chalk.
That's crazy.
I
know 03, 04, that's when Bovis Homes started developing that area.
Right.
So,
You know, the estate agents and everything. Like,
the whole history.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's the thing. So I feel like it would be an interesting place to research and look into. And sometimes I got into like a, I go down rabbit holes sometimes, and yeah, I was just thinking about like, yeah, why, when did Lakeside sort of come about and what was it? And, but there's not really a lot to sort of look at, but unless you were there and sort of witnessed it at the time, then it's interesting.
It is interesting because we've all been there more or less, a lot of, like, I know more of Chafford than I know of anywhere else, if that makes sense. So it does have a, obviously a special place in our hearts. So just, it's always interesting to find out new things about it, but to meet someone that's been there since 94 is crazy. Because
is it though? Like, I feel
it's
like
insane. I didn't know it was a place you could live in 94.
Well, I mean, yeah, we were like one of the first.
That's a whole life.
I feel like second batch.
Yeah, literally. I wasn't born. So
but it was like, I mean, it was fresh. Like, it was like fresh, brand new.
I hear
like
what you're saying, but that's crazy.
But even, you know, Gerald.
Yeah.
You know they got a street named after.
That's because they were in a competition. Carew Close, which Amar lives on.
Yeah, Carol's name. Carol's name.
It's mad.
The name of the app.
They were like, I remember when they did the competition. They got together. No, like, I think there was like five or six of like the original families to move into Chafford, and they were one of them. And they said they just put their name into a hat. My mum always jokes, like, if they had a proper Nigerian name, they would have been...
Oh, that would have been... Follow him, he closes crazy.
No, but imagine that, though.
That's what I'm saying.
It would be interesting close. If it was. Yeah. Like, yeah.
That's interesting. No. I never knew that.
But we'll never know.
Look
we'll
how deep,
know.
Like, in, when so you cool. actually go deeper. Like, we're actually entrenched in the culture of Trafford.
Yeah, that's Harold Crows.
Like, that's that is. I didn't know that.
That's his bits. So it's like, wow,
crazy.
Because he went. The older brother went Willie Edds in the end, or I think that's how it went. But
no, he went
Trafford.
Yeah, he was
Trafford.
Like the head of our school council.
Mad.
He was like, because we didn't have a head boy, but he was basically.
Oh, so you're in the same year as Marie, innit?
What's her last name?
I'll bleep it out. Swamba. Kenyan. Nah. Yeah, because they were in the same year.
I don't know.
She came, I think, in year 11.
Oh, maybe. What? Did she go by another name?
No, just Marie.
Do you know what? Vaguely, like I said, especially if you just showed up in year 11, there were a few of them randoms that just came on right at the end, and I was like, I'm not gonna bother learning for the next few months. But there was a few people. I swear to God, there was a boy that was in my year, and I literally only like recognized him in like year 10. Like, I saw him in assembly one day, and I went to my mates, like, who's that guy? Like, is he in the year above? And they were like, no, he's been there, like, the whole time.
Damn.
Wow.
But we just, like, we literally never had a class together.
But that is possible. I think less so for us because...
No, I remember everybody.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Less so for us. I think we were more...
integrated.
Yes.
No,
yes.
We were more integrated in year 10.
I hear it, but even before that, you knew who people were.
Kind of.
He's saying he didn't know who someone was till year 10.
I mean, it was one guy. He was like very quiet.
Okay,
he
fair,
was
enough.
Like,
fair enough. We'll let you have that.
They might just pop up.
I hear it.
I've been there the whole entire time.
So you've always been musically inclined, would you say?
Ish.
Where did it start?
Yeah.
Actually, Trafford. Mm. That's where it started. Like, honestly, the way they made this school sounds so sick. Like, before we joined, we had like this whole... I still remember there was like a booklet that you had to fill out before you started school. So it was I guess in the summer holidays after year six. And it was like, you know, when you come to campus, like what kind of activities you're going to want to get involved in, like do you want to play football or this and that, da, da, da. And I literally remember it was just like, would you like to do a musical instrument? And you could tick one. And I swear to you, like at the time, like the TV was on and I saw Nickelback on TV and he was like rocking out on guitar. And I was like, yeah, I might learn guitar. Never expressed an interest in it before. I'd never even picked up a guitar before that. I was just like, yeah, cool. Like, might as well. Like, literally whilst watching it on TV. And then when I got there, my teacher was like, biggest stoner you've ever met in your life. Like, but I didn't know it at the time. I couldn't recognize those traits when I was in year seven. But he just didn't care. Like, I had the most like laid back like introduction into like making music. He was just like, oh, what kind of stuff are you listening to? So I just go online, print off the sheet music, and we'll come in and we'll like jam it. So I never did the whole, because I'd actually my dad tried to get me into piano. Like, as a like traditional, you know, is like a kid should learn something kind
of thing.
And just didn't get on with it, because to me it was weird, because in my head the piano music, all like Bar Black Sheep and that wasn't translating to the stuff I was listening to. I was like, I can't. It wasn't even music. I was like, it's just another class that I'm doing. But then when my teacher was like, oh yeah, we can play some Linkin Park or whatever, Limp Bizkit, like da 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 da, I was like, oh, what? Like, I can play that. Like, and hearing like, and then he'd show me it, and I was like, oh, like literally someone in front of you is now playing the music that you've just listened to on the CD. Yeah. And he's telling you that if you copy him, you can make these same sounds as well. And I was like, sick. So from that day, I was like, not really from that day. It just took me a while to like, I think once I grasped it, and once I just had that, like, you get over the first hump and you actually start like not sounding shit.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, cool. Like, then I was like hooked on it. So pretty much, from year, like middle of year seven onwards, and then straggled together a few people from class, made a little band, used to play in assemblies and that, thinking we were like next level.
Wait. But, were you in the same year as Quinn?
Quinn was a year above me.
Okay. Right.
I've not seen him in ages, actually. But yeah, we were close. He,
shout out to him as well.
Yeah, because I remember he started learning guitar as well.
Mm.
So that's how I got to know him. Yeah, he was learning for a bit. And then, yeah, he was making, he went into like producing and stuff and that as well.
Mm.
But no, I remember, yeah, Quinn was, yeah, he was a year above.
Okay.
So in terms of like your career and everything you've managed to go on to achieve and do and the sights you've seen, what have been some of the biggest highlights for you? And how would you say, obviously you started in school, what was that the real turning point for you that it was like, yeah, I want to take music seriously, I want to do this?
Like, turning point wise, it's hard to pinpoint because I definitely loved music by the time I was like year 11, like leaving school. Like, yeah, I went to Palmer's to do like music tech and learn it further, but I think it was still just something I was like, yeah, I like this, but I don't really know like where it's going. And then ended up like opening up like a studio, literally just at my parents' house, and it got to a point where it turned into like my actual like job, and it was serious, and I had like a lot of like bands and artists coming through. And around that point, and I was still in the band at this point as well, and I think I had a whole weekend of just doing that. And I was like, it was almost like a little preview. It was like, oh, this could just be my regular week.
Yeah.
Like, so I was still at uni at this point, and I was like, it's literally like Friday I had a gig, then Saturday I was recording a band, and then Sunday I was recording a band, and then played another gig in the evening. And I was like, if you're a musician, this is just like every day for you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I was like, oh, that's actually, that would be a sick life. That'd actually be good. And I'd say probably from there, I started taking it like seriously. But like, in terms of memorable moments, like probably the one that stands out to me the most was when I played at the O2 in 2016. And I remember, because I knew where my parents would be sitting and I could see them.
Yeah.
Like, and I could actually see them from stage. So I was like, that was a cool, like, full circle moment.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah,
watching them after, like, supporting me and putting up with so much noise in the house for so many years. Getting to actually see it, like, pay off was, like, pretty cool. Yeah, and that was just fun as well. Arenas are fun. This isn't a regular occurrence in my life. This was, like, a one-off, like, magical, like, month that I had like many, many years ago. But just pure luck. A lot of music is just, well, for me anyway, it's just been luck.
Yeah.
Just blagging it and just lucking my way onto certain things. But no, we were on tour for just over a month and a half and pretty much played like every arena in the UK. Like,
wow.
Lovely,
so
man.
We started, so the first night of tour was actually at Wembley. That was the very first show. And the band we were opening up for, it was like their reunion tour. So like, to put into context, they split up when I started at campus.
Okay.
And they finally got back together in 2016, after like years and years of people being like, oh yeah, we want you to come back to that. They finally did it. And I remember like, we were just nervous, like backstage, just like, I've never played like to that many people. I've never gone on stage to that many people before. And usually you can sort of look to the headliners to sort of, you know, like, sounds weird, but like comfort you, you know, kind of, like reassure you sort of thing. But I was like, these guys haven't done it in almost 20 years. Like, they were just as nervous as we were. So everyone was just like a wreck backstage. So. But nah, like, literally got on, loved it, it was sick, and then yeah, pretty much did that like rooms of that size for like an entire month.
That's crazy.
So that was wild.
That is an experience. What do you learn from an experience like that?
I definitely learned how to work smarter and not harder, because it's an endurance game. It's a long game. Like, I'm used to just kind of doing a show and then going home.
Yeah.
And then this was the first time that I really had to think about, okay, well, not going back home for at least, like, I think we had, like, pretty much, I think, no, I went home once, actually. And it was only after we did London, because then we had a day off before flying to Dublin. So that was the only time in the month that, like, I went home once. So usually, like, you know, you want to be in your own bed and rest and recuperate. But then doing that, especially vocally as well, you kind of, needs to think about getting rest and staying healthy and like, and just endurance for that long.
Yeah.
That's probably like the biggest thing I learned. But, and also, yeah, just living in the moment and just really like, there was the that moment where I saw my parents like from stage. I was like, I was very mindful of just, I just want to stand here and just like properly take it in. Because that's the thing, I hear a lot of people, the most depressing thing is, because I'm a massive podcast fan, listen to you guys, obviously. Yeah. Listen to a bunch of podcasts and I love hearing people's story. Oh, side note, the guy you had on, Jamie, was it?
Yeah, that one
was sick. Yeah, I really enjoyed listening to his story. But like, in that similar vein, when I listen to people talk about like things they've done and this and that and all that, celebrities and artists and stuff, they're like, oh yeah, but I didn't appreciate any of it at the time. And oh, I wish I could go back to this time and, you know, this great time I had. So I was like, rather than getting to 40 and being like, oh, I remember that time when I was 20 and I did this. I'm just going to actually enjoy it in that moment when it's happening, rather than retrospectively enjoying that. So yeah, I had the best time, to put it shortly. Like, I just like properly soaked everything in with the mindset of like, I'm probably never gonna be here again, sort of thing. Like, a lot of these rooms were just like crazy, just unattainable for me as a solo artist. So I was like, let me just enjoy this. Like,
yeah, 100%. I think it must have been an incredible experience just to have that, and then to be in that sort of position as well. I don't even know what I'd do if I was in front of that many people, so I can completely understand the nerves. How do you combat nerves in a situation like that, or is it just a case of you've got to embrace them?
Yeah, I embrace it.
Because you do a lot of solo gigs as well. Like, how do you, because it's all on you, if that makes sense.
It is, but I like that because I'm a control freak. If I'm in control, then that's fine. But like, I'm not really a quote guy or like a sayings guy, but there was one that I had in my studio for so long, and it was, confidence comes from knowing what to do. And I feel like when I know my stuff and I know what's going on and I've got everything, like, then I'm calm. The only time I really get nervous is when I'm like unsure about stuff, or like, I don't know, there might be like a new song that I'm like unsure about how it goes and stuff. That's when I'll get nervous. But if I know my set inside out, which most of the time I do, then yeah, then I'm fine, then I'm not really worrying. But I think it was just, I like gigs and stuff, they don't really make me nervous. But I think just that, I think that's why it was so weird for me, and I remember it, just because I think just the whole thing about, because I think anytime anyone's ever playing Wembley, people are like, oh, wow. And I think everyone around me is making a big deal about it. Everyone in the crew is making a big deal. Like, oh, we're in Wembley today. And I think just a lot of that like grandeur just comes up and it makes you overthink stuff. But essentially, just playing just same songs I always play. So, like, you know,
I guess it's no different to any other, like, you should just treat it like any other night. Obviously, it's got its grandiose, there's a grandiose feeling attached to the moment, but you shouldn't, it's good that you don't go out and then let it kind of haunt you almost.
Not overwhelm you in
exactly,
a way.
Exactly, that's the word I was looking for. So I wanted to talk about the album.
Yes.
The Prius Diaries, A Hybrid Story. Incredible work, well done.
Thank you.
Like,
I was
thoroughly impressed.
How did you come up with that name?
So most of my songs were written in my car, which is a Prius. Right. And recorded as well during lockdown.
Recorded?
Yeah, during lockdown. Actually, funny that we're in Pirate Studios, because I had to like fight to get in here over lockdown. I basically had to prove that this was a place of work. So I had to like prove income from like my YouTube and like Spotify and stuff, that I'm actually like making money from music. So for a long time I couldn't get into Pirate because it was like closed off to the general public, and then when I could, I think I was just like broke over lockdown. And I was like, I've got nowhere to record, so literally just took my laptop, my interface, my mic to my car, and I was just like demoing, writing.
Because
I was like, so I do a lot of like loud, like screamy stuff, so I didn't want to do that in my apartment. It would just be a bit weird.
I hear it. But no, I was really impressed, and I think you really got into a lot of the stuff you wanted to discuss on the album. Like, it was a real insight into what you must have been going through at that time. Relationships that might not have worked out.
Yeah.
Just things going on with you personally. Stop Living and Don't Dream. I can see why you really pushed that song. Incredible.
Appreciate it, man.
I enjoyed Day Drinker as well. I felt like I could relate to that because I know a lot of women like that. basically, I think that's my favourite song on the album as well. The whole idea is just about a girl who... Her friend's going in one direction, she's going in another, and she's basically a pisshead. long and short.
This is the best description of this song ever. This is better than I do in like press and stuff.
Screwjob 97, I love wrestling, so I really appreciated that. And then Let You Go Part 2, I thought was a real insight to a situation where we've all been, you know, you get invited to maybe an old flames engagement sort of party, and you know, the ideas that go through your head. What was the writing process for a lot of these songs? Because you did a fantastic job.
Honestly, thank you so much, man. But a lot of it, to be real, just getting in my feels and just like rather than just like Facebook stalking or lamenting about it, just actually trying to be productive and bring something out of it. But I think a lot of those sort of all came together like very quickly. Like all those tracks you just mentioned were probably in like a 6-month period where I had a bunch of songs that were sort of ready for the album. And then my label were actually really, really cool in this sense. Because it was meant to be... Like, so there's like maybe like a 6-month process between delivering the album to when it actually comes out.
Mm.
So I remember the deadline was like August of 2022.
Oh, wow.
And so would have been released like early 2023, and it didn't come out till like December.
Yeah.
So, but what happened in that time was, so I had a bunch of songs, and then like, I remember Let You Go Part 2. I wrote that, in the summer. And the minute I did it, I emailed my label and I was like, yes, yeah, so you know that list that I sent to you that said all the album tracks? Yeah, don't worry about that. Let's scrap that because this song needs to go on there now. So now I need to think about taking one out.
Mm.
Basically, this just kept on happening, literally every single day. And I was like, I think as well, as a creative, I'm always kind of mindful about...
The product that you push.
Yeah. Exactly. Like I'm very on point with what I want to put out. Like it's got to be to my standard, but also there's just this weird thing in the back of your mind, like, you know, when's it going to run out? Like when is the tap going to shut off? Because at that point I literally could not stop writing songs. Could not stop. And it's the complete opposite of what a lot of people feel. They're like struggling to write, or they get like writer's block and stuff. I would literally sit down to record a song, and then in between just like tuning the guitar, just making sure it's all sounding good, I'll just start like playing around with something else. And I'll be like, oh, that sounds sick. And that's another song. That's another song right there. And then I go off into a tangent and do that. So basically this just kept on happening until like... pretty much every song that I had ready for the album was like, no, that's replaced. And so it took a long time for me to actually be like, okay, this is the final album. And the whole time my label were like, we'd rather have a great album in a year's time than 100%. An all right one now. And yeah, they were cool with that. Let me spend all the time I needed on it. Like, I mean, I think Screwjob, I think I wrote that like, it was definitely last summer. It was like one of the last ones to come out. Just again, that was another one of just me just messing around, started playing around with it. And I was like, nah, but I need people to hear it like now. that has to go on. Like,
yeah.
So, and it's been fun. It's been really good to have that process and actually just really enjoy it and really love everything on the album rather than feeling like, oh, well, something's got to come out, so just whatever.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Were you happy with... Are you happy with the final product?
Love it.
Yeah, as you should. You made something that... Because what I really appreciate is, you know, the sort of music that we probably listen to on here. It wouldn't be the normal genre that we'd go to, but what you managed to create felt very universal.
Really?
And
I appreciate
a
that,
real
man.
Appeal. And I feel like it's one of those things you could have put... You could put those sort of songs in any sort of room, and I feel like they'd work, especially the ones that I resonated with most. I just felt like there was, it was something special. And as you said, you do, there is the element of screaming, but I feel like there's a purpose to it. Sometimes, and when I've heard it, it's not really added to the song, if that makes sense. But I feel like you've used it creatively, and
there's a lot of music that just does it for the sake of it.
Exactly. Like, yeah, like, just to, but I felt like you was using, when you did go to that place, it was to add to the song. Just the production just felt like to a high quality, because it's weird, because I know you, if that makes sense. And we've done a lot of this where we've interviewed people that we know, but for me personally, this is the most studio sounding album, if that makes sense. Like, bro, it sounds like,
appreciate that, man.
There's been time,
and it was done in the car. There was no studio.
It was done in the Prius.
Nice. Yeah, but how did you do between that? The Prius and the Pirate Studios? Yeah, between that,
oh, crazy.
Yeah.
Did you foam up the whole windows and everything?
No, I don't believe in any of that, man. No.
Really?
Like, oh.
I'm not. I'm like the least producer-y producer. Ever. Basically, like, long story short, without going on too many tangents, because I can just get way too nerdy and we'll start talking about TS loss tables and different types of
phones. I'm only assuming, I don't want to, because like the way this is like sounded up and everything, like,
it's fine, it's fine. But yeah, long story short, I went to uni, studied all that stuff. We did like calculations on what's the best soundproofing to do and this, and I've done all of that and done recordings on that, and we had the nicest equipment, the nicest mics, desks, preamps, all that kind of stuff. And then I went home and recorded something on like my £20 Behringer mic, and it sounded just as good. But I think I basically spent so long at uni around people that were like, I'm not walking into a studio unless there's a Neumann U87 there, and like, you know, this preamp and and all this kind of stuff. And we've come out of uni, so like my first, like, it sounds so cheesy, but like, break was, I remember I submitted the class. We had like a songwriting module, and we had to submit a song that we'd like produced, and then the class critiques it. And I remember the teacher being like, the lecturer or whatever, he was like, oh, you know, it's just, there's just no hook, like you need to do this and that, and the production's like blah 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 blah. And that track was the one that got me on Radio One.
Oh.
And that's the one that I ended up submitting to BBC and introducing. It's true though. It's true. And it was like all this stuff about, oh, you didn't do this, you didn't follow these rules, and you didn't do this, and then and it's like, I made a song that sounded good. Like, it's, you know.
What's so funny though, when you actually put it out like that, like, the whole idea of music and being creative is like, it's freedom.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So you go somewhere.
Art has no rules.
Actually, really,
art has no rules.
And there's all these rules.
There's no, like, I think it's the hardest thing. It's the hardest thing to put into a box, like a curriculum.
Because it's all subjective as well. Like, what works for me might not work for you. Like, even to the sound thing, there's a really popular song by Lil Yachty. You know his breakout song, One Night? It was, like, recorded on, as you say, like, a really shitty mic in his grandma's basement. And then what they did is they remastered it to make it sound. And that
it sounds worse. It happens all the time.
Yeah. Did not enjoy the remastered version.
Anytime they bring out something that's remastered or retweaked or something, I'm just like, nah, it was fine.
It was fine. Before. It was meant to be made that way. And music, I tend to find a lot of the time, is it's lightning in a bottle and you can't recreate that moment. You hear people re-record their songs. That was their biggest song.
It's, if 50 Cent
re-recorded in the club, like, it's not gonna happen again.
No. And then also as well, I don't know the song for Tyler the Creator, but he basically just sat in the corner, rather than the whole studio that he has and the whole ambience that he creates, just sat in the corner and then just did the whole song.
Yeah,
it was supposed to sound like that. Also, Jay-Z on a couple of tracks in the 444 album, he wasn't feeling well, and you could hear it once he said it, but other than that, I mean, it sounds beautiful as well.
Yeah.
So sometimes art has no rules.
No, 100%. But even, mate, but look at,
like Colin said.
I was just listening back to Through the Wire, Kanye.
Mm.
Like, it's literally about him. He had his mouth shut. Like,
His mouth
was like wired shut. And it's like, any other circumstance should be like, bro, let's,
that
just
should
delay,
not be
like,
a song. Yeah,
come back.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine. He's like, nah.
He's like, nah.
We're doing this. We're doing this today.
50 Cent as well. His biggest asset is the fact that he has fragments in his fragments in his tongue.
Mm.
and he's still, and that whole like drawl that he has, it's brought an emphasis to his sound, and it's just made him the multi-millionaire that we know him to.
100%. Music should have no rules.
There's no rules. There's no boundaries. Like, you can do whatever you want. But 100%. Going to your point, especially, like, I found it less... Yeah, it's been way less restrictive if I'm not thinking about all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
Because the minute I've had an idea, like, I'm either in my apartment or I've got my car, or if I'm close enough and I can afford it, I'll come to a pirate and do something really quickly. If I had to hold myself to that standard of, oh, well, if it's not recorded at Abbey Road, I'm not doing it. Because I've met people like that, bro. Yeah. I've met so many people that are like, they're like, when I'd post up pictures, recording or whatever. Mm. And this is like back in the day, they'd be like, what, like, you recorded drums in the living room? Like, what? Literally, like, my parents' living room, I had like full drum kit set up with like microphones and all that kind of stuff and like triggers. And people are like, how can you record a drum kit in the living room? I'm like,
how can you not?
Microphones, isn't it? Like, it's just, mate, everything just goes into logic and then you do whatever you want to at that point. Like,
I think people at that point, like, you're almost letting these things get in the way. And I'm sure there's a sort of people that would be delayed. And one thing I'm really mad about you is, throughout the years, you've just kept on putting out music and there's been no excuse. I think a lot of those people, they're probably trying to find any excuse. Well, I couldn't record it at such and such studio. Yeah. Well, I can't make the song now. Like, no, these things, especially with the way technology's advanced as well, it's there to aid your music and make it sound better. Like, a lot of the things... Maybe if this was like the 60s or the 70s, I'd get it. But now you can do so much off a laptop.
100%.
Even Madlib himself, he produces on the iPad.
That's like insane.
Everybody gets like the computer, gets the whole... I don't know, nothing, bruv. I'm just going to... But basically, they get everything together to then produce nothing, whereas this guy is just there on the iPad just...
No, that's what I mean. That's what I mean.
And it still creates what he creates.
Yeah.
So,
mate, an iPad has more in it than whatever the Beatles were using, Elvis was using
that
back
is
in
a
the
fact.
Day. Like, you've got more on that little thing. Like, I go on there, I've got every instrument that's ever been created, every synth, like, and it's just there on this iPad. Like, and that's crazy. And that's what people have been wanting for all them years. Like, if you went to them lot back in the day, and you were like, okay, so it's going to cost you this amount of million to hire, you know, these people, this producer, like all this kind of stuff. Or I'm going to give you this little tablet and you've got every sound that's ever been made in the world.
Like, that's exactly, that's what you need. And
so there is no excuse.
Yeah,
there's
the music that's being created as well is, you could argue, maybe in some cases, not quality wise, but like, what they're able to do is outstanding. I guess my question to you, my question to you is, how did you get into the sort of music that you make and that you like? I don't think you're someone that would restrict yourself, but it's always fascinated me because it's not something that you normally associate with people of color, but I like the direction that you've gone in and the music that you've made, and it's for you, if that makes sense. Like, I believe the music you make is something you'd listen to. How did you get to that point?
Mine, honestly, was probably wrestling.
Okay.
Probably at that time.
Sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
Like Triple H's so music.
Yeah.
And all that. And I was like, oh, sick. Like, this hits.
Mm. Like, 100%.
Yeah.
The Generation X, like.
That's it, bro. That's it.
You just know
what time and literally from that, then I was like, and then do you remember the CDs used to come out?
Yes.
She'd get like the WWF CDs, like all the theme music, and it would have the bands on there, and there was one. And then I just started looking up.
So you
the individual
knew that
bands.
That man weren't singing their songs, because
that's the whole thing. I'm saying that's the whole thing.
That's what I said the other day in the group chat. Shawn Michaels, I thought he sang a song. Triple H,
he does.
Oh, Shawn Michaels.
Shawn Michaels does. He's the only one that does.
Ah, okay.
So that's fair enough. But that was the thing, no, because that they. I remember an interview with Vince McMahon, he was saying they did that on purpose. They tried to get singers that looked like how you would think the wrestler sounded.
Yeah.
So, because I thought Big Show sang his music.
Oh, 100%.
That was the one that I thought.
Yeah.
But No, okay, but I think at that point I already knew like most of the band. So like Triple H, he had like Motorhead doing music. And so then I started like getting into them. And then it's, you just end up in a rabbit hole after that. Because then they start talking about bands that they're on tour with and collabing with and stuff and And then you just end up in this whole world of guitar music and you're like, but that was a mad thing for me though, because then obviously growing up in an African household, we had soca, reggae, like Afrobeats before it was Afrobeats, like
didn't even have a name back then.
It was just African music. Like it was just like all them bangers. But so I sort of, it was like kind of adjacent in a weird way, because that's the thing, everyone kind of assumed that, oh, like you only listen to rock and then like you hate like R&B or like rap or whatever. And I was like, nah, I just need an iPod twice the size of yours, because like I've got everything. That's the thing, because like there was a point where I think I only listened to like probably like rock and metal, maybe when I was like 15, because I think you're very like headstrong at that point. And I think that was the time I was doing the most like musically. But then I don't know, man, bangers are bangers.
Exactly, songs come out.
A pop song comes out, like, you know, and you're like, oh, that's sick. Or that's the thing, like anytime I'd go to one of my parents' parties or someone's getting married or someone does this, like Premier Gal comes on and I'm like, oh,
yeah.
I've heard this before. I can't not dance to this one. Like, 100%. You're like, that's it, you get them. And this, and I think even at that point, before I recognized what it was, this nostalgia. And I think a lot of that is always going to be tied to me.
Yeah.
But then nowadays, like, no, my listening taste is all over the place. Like, it's shocking. Like, there's so much. Like, for me personally, I think UK grime's in a good place.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people don't like currently, like, what the output is. But I think just sonically, if I just kind of, I don't want to say like switch my ears off, but if I'm just like literally just catching a vibe, like I'm not trying to deep music too much, I think a lot of it just, I think it just sounds good. I like it. Pop music, I think, is good at the moment, because a lot of writers that do rock and pop kind of crossover. So there's a lot of pop songs that I'm like, oh, that sounds like a rock writer wrote that, because it's got a bit more edge, like Olivia Rodrigo, like all that kind of stuff. I'm like, it's not just your, like, it's not like S Club and track, like, that was just, to me, that was a dark time.
Really?
Like Atomic Kitten and S Club all these, my guys. It was too dark for me. It was just so, like, it's just English bland.
You must have hated the Spice Girls.
Loved them. No, that was it. I think it should have stopped after Spice Girls. We should have stopped the band, like, girl band era after that. Spice Girls, you had All Saints, they were sick. Sugar Babes, where I draw the line, they were fire. But then I think after all, like the game show, like the X Factor people and all that, it was not for me.
Set of plants, yeah. 100%
Yeah,
true. Right, literally,
yeah.
They don't hide it though.
They never hit it.
Fuck it. What's it? One Direction, Liam. He already had a relationship with Simon Cowell before he got to the So
no surprises there.
I'm not. It's his way of trying to, and it's always funny how the person who doesn't win X Factor doesn't go on to be as successful as that second and third. So it's something to think about for sure.
Do you know what I was going to ask you, just out of your, just from your opinion, because there was a stage where like rock music was very much in the forefront of like mainstream music. Yeah. It was in the charts all over the place. Now when I see the charts, maybe the past 4 or 5 years, it's kind of shifted on to like being a leech. Pop music has kind of leached onto more like rap elements now.
And that rap sign,
which is kind of beginning to decline recently. And you get like the Olivia Rodrigos and certain artists who are now beginning to latch onto that rock element again. Do you feel like there'll ever be another heyday where it becomes like the big thing again? Or is it just not?
I think so. I think everything's cyclical.
Yeah.
I think everything's just sort of like gonna come and go in its like stages, because there is a lot of that now, and a lot of artists are doing like rock versions or like rock collabs and stuff, and there's like a lot more of that. But I think music's always going to be so cyclical, but also maybe having one genre having its heyday is irrelevant now, because you've got so much listening like that's just readily available for
you. Yeah.
I think maybe even like 10 years ago, maybe more. Like, all right, say I always give people this example when I'm like, okay, well, when you're thinking about your song, like it's irrelevant now, but it used to be a really good saying. I was like, if you've got £10 and you've got Drake's new song next to your new song and both your albums cost £10, like you need to convince the listener to spend your £10 on you and not Drake. So you need to make sure your stuff is like, 9 times out of 10 they're gonna side with Drake, but at least like that's where you need to be aiming for. Do you know what I mean? So like when you look at it in that sense, it's like, okay, well, if everyone's like shifting over to this genre, then I need to be in that, like, to try and get that. But now it's like, okay, well, I've listened to your thing on Spotify, then I'm gonna listen to the next guy's stuff on Spotify. It's like there's not that physical, like, definitive payment that you need to do that says like, oh, okay, well, this is who I'm siding with. Like I can go, I jump through playlists like so much. I've got like New Music Friday, then Rap Caviar, then like Punk Pop playlist, like all this. Like
there is no attachment to it because before it was your hard, like you had to use your hard earned money.
So you better like that album
to that. So there was a high level of appreciation to that album. Whereas now.
Whereas now that same £10 I've got everything.
Imagine spending money on an album and it's bad. Oof.
That is
hilarious. Oh, if I had to pay.
I swear you could get a refund.
Nah, I don't think so.
HMV were shocking, man. They would
they'd give anything back or
no? Like I remember my mum arguing with the man because I bought this Spider-Man game and I didn't like it. And I tried to take it back and he was like, "No, we can't return games once they've been opened." Like,
yeah, they were hot.
They were a whole
once that plastic was
opened.
Yeah, it's over. Yeah, nah, paying for albums would have been crazy. And then to not like
trash,
it,
just giving... Can you imagine?
Well, then again, that's why they took time with their albums.
That's it, yeah. And that's you could argue that, now it's
very fast-paced. Yeah.
Not even fast-paced, there is a quantity volume that is just so out there where you could actually listen to anything. So like, for example, you obviously going on the journey of just listening to rock and then now listening to everything. Like, I'm on a similar journey with drum and bass. Like me and my brother, we used to, back in the day, we would beatbox like drum and bass. And then now all of a sudden we don't listen to drum and bass, we listen to a collection of genres. So like you have your R&B, Afrobeats, not even just Afrobeats, because there's a whole subgenre of African music. So it's not just Afrobeats itself, but there's African music as well, there's hip hop, but then drum and bass is just like, I'm feeling it.
That's your home. That's like your go-to.
Back then, you would have to actually go physically buy something and then say, this is the stuff I'm going to listen
to. That's true,
But now, it's just like...
accessibility. Exactly. Yeah, I hear that.
That's interesting.
And I'm hearing it. I'm here
for real.
That's good, man. It's open. It's open to whatever you want to be listening to. And it makes it easier to kind of like, as an artist as well, to kind of promote to people. Because I think... maybe, and tell me if I'm wrong, but I don't know if we would have had the same conversation we had, like, if it was 20 years ago, and you were someone that predominantly listened to R&B, and, you know, someone brought out a rock album, and you had to, like, physically pay money for that.
Yeah, it's true. That's a very...
may not have had that connection where it's like, if it just pops up on the internet and you're like, oh, yeah, I know this guy, I'll give him a chance... and you stumble across it and you happen to like it, I think that's more, we're more likely to have those conversations these days. Like the amount of random stuff that I've just gotten into, like I like super got into classical at one point just because there was a really, there's a beautiful, beautiful piano sound that I was saving up. I actually waited till Black Friday for this, like it was like a synth. And it's just the nicest piano you've heard. Beautiful. And then I went into research it and the guy that designed the piano, he released his stuff on Spotify and it's like this weird mix of like classical with like electronic kind of EDM elements. And it's just gorgeous. It's just beautiful music. And I was like, this would never have been on my radar. Like if you said to me like, oh, you gotta go all the way to HMV and buy this obscure like neoclassical album, I'd be like, oh, okay.
And back then it wasn't even the case like they say, oh, we might not have it. So you have to
go to this show.
So it's like now it's a whole journey to go and get that album.
It's a whole
thing. Then that whole appreciation is like, this album is GOAT. And you're not going to try and tell me it's not gold. Whereas now,
yeah,
everything there.
It's a catch 22 though, because yeah, it's a catch 22 because I feel like what you're saying is because you had to physically do much more to get the payoff, you valued it more. But then is it a quantity versus quality thing? Because now I'm saying, I feel like all of us have listened to stuff that we would have never have listened to.
Yeah, 100%.
Because it's there.
If it's good,
so we
it's
have
good.
More, but maybe we don't value it the same as the CDs we got where, that we had to pay money for. Yeah. But then also, is there a nostalgia factor? You putting that into it as well? 100%. Is that a thing? Yeah. Like,
but then on top of that as well, like the MP3s. Like you had megabytes.
Yeah.
Now
so
the phone
can't
has
download your
yeah.
Yeah.
I
space
yeah. for that.
So if you had that album, like even your thing, your iPod, I put loads of music on there. But I don't know, it was like what, 5 gig?
Yeah, it was 5 gig.
5 gig. Wow. 5 gig is only maybe like 100 songs. And them 100 songs I gave you mixtape songs and everything like that. So like some of them were just like five of the same songs. It's just there's a remix, there's this one, there's this one. So like, oh, yeah, like there is a lot, but you're correct in what you're saying, very much correct
in the sense. But no, I think I wasn't saying that as a statement. I was saying I don't know what's better. What do you think is the better scenario, if there is one?
There isn't.
I'm just saying I don't know.
There isn't.
What feels, because I feel like you're right in the sense that we don't get because that, like, I went out, I had to find this album and I got it and it's every song's a banger, every song hits. We don't have that anymore because I just click on Spotify and then boom, it's cool. Yeah, it's but we also, the flip side of that is that we also have everything that we wouldn't normally have access to. Like, or even they uploaded, I think it was I could be wrong, don't quote me on this, but it's, I think it's Jay-Z's on the Black album, there's also like a commentary album, so it's got him talking like about the process
of each song
like in the track order.
That is incredible.
I think it's that, but they've done that with a few albums. It might not be that specific one, but like things like that. That, like, how would you find that otherwise, unless she was like in his fan club back in the day or something? Like,
it's just good to have accessibility. So I guess the final question for us is, what's next for you?
So this year, bringing out the deluxe album, nice. Which is just going to have a few more tracks on there that didn't quite make the cut. But I feel like they should have
their life on an album. Yeah.
With a new single as well, actually, that is being written currently. But that is a plan. And then some more shows. Going to try and get out to do some more gigs around the UK, possibly elsewhere. But yeah, man, just keep it pushing, keeping the content going.
Yeah.
Basically a TikToker at this point. That's basically where I spend most of my time promoting my music, but
it
but
works.
Yeah, man.
Do you think it will ever go back? Because I remember there was a conversation. I mean, there is one artist that I know of that does this, but there are some artists who want to go back. Actually, no, two artists. So there's Mac Homie and Lloyd Banks. They're selling CDs, physical CDs.
Wow.
So you have to be, even JME as well. JME, before he put it on Spotify for, I think, maybe a year and a half.
Yeah,
I remember this.
He just put it out on the CD and you had to go physically copy it. Do you think he'll ever go back?
No, only because everyone you've mentioned already has a name. They're already established. Like, I've been listening to JME for like how many years? Like, he has an extensive like fan base that's already there for him to say, we've been repping you for years. If you'll bring that CD, yeah, of course, I'll buy it. I'll support you. If you decided you want to be an artist today and you went to some next man on the street, like, I'm an artist, buy my CD. Believe in me. Trust me.
I've given him a fiver. I've given one guy a fiver.
Yeah, nice. Nine times out of ten.
Just give the CD for free.
So people even
yeah, but that's
even that even bro. If you got given the CD, and what am I going to play it on?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. My laptop don't be doing that.
No,
that's crazy.
It's harder. Does like you have to really.
Does the Mac accept CDs?
Nah, the new ones don't.
Yeah, no, the new ones don't for sure. No laptop does.
No, Nah, you gotta do a USB drive.
Even if you gave someone a drive, like, I'll just delete it and just use it as a drive. I'll just wipe it. And I've got a new flash drive. Like,
that's not a bad.
Like, you've got to be where people are. Like, back in the day, everyone was just standing around in HMV, just chilling. Like, they were just waiting for new stuff to come out, or they'd be watching MTV or like VH1 or all this, or like Channel U. Like, you'd find new artists
stealing skull candies.
Yeah. That was a vibe.
Yeah, you know exactly.
We all did it.
That was it. You were just there, and then if you happen to stumble across new music, then cool. So but like, now, like, so where everyone is now is on their phones, on TikTok. So that's where I need to be. That's
to
where
try
I
and get it. Engagement.
Like, yeah, and I like it because it means I get to stay inside more. You know,
I hear that.
Don't mind making content in my room, and then you know that's it. Like, so yeah, I don't think it will go back, but there'll just be something new. There's always the next thing.
Yeah,
100%.
But I don't know. Maybe we do go so far one way that we go basically back to the Stone Age and we start from scratch. Maybe like. But I think that's everything in life and technology and everything. Like, maybe we've just gone, because like, if you said to people like 30 years ago, oh yeah, like, but when all the teachers were like, you need to learn maths because you're not gonna have a calculator in your pocket, I do now.
That's like, crazy.
That's it. No one saw any of this coming. Like,
no, it's true.
There's like a 14-year-old millionaire who just sits on his phone all day. When mum was like, oh, get off the PlayStation, it's not going to earn you money. All right, look at KSI.
Yeah.
Like, real, I could have been him. If I was left alone to play FIFA all them years, I could have done that.
If I was left to my own devices.
That's what I mean. No one saw any of this. So we don't know what the next thing is going to be. Like, I can't even guess to you at this point. But for the time being, whilst every teenager, adult on their way to work, granny sitting at home is sitting on their phone, like doing that. If you want to be seen, that's where
you gotta be.
That's the most chance of you being seen.
100%. All right. Well, music. The way we end the show is we pick a song that we're currently listening to. I'm going to pick your song, Day Drinker.
I still have no decisions. So might as well double up on yours.
Okay. Fine. Did I bring that? I'm going to pick Kitchen Lights by Westside Gunn.
Kitchen Lights.
Damn. All right, hold on.
Kitchen Lights.
Do you know what? We're going to do... I'm going to do... Wait, so I get two because you fall for
your goal. Yeah, you get two.
All right, okay. First one I'm going to do is called I Hate Goodbyes by Darla Jade, who's an artist I actually met a couple months ago, and... We've been listening to each other, but we didn't know who each other were. And when we exchanged Instagrams, I was like, I recognize your name. And yeah, been listening to all the songs. And now we know each other in real life, which
that's
is sick.
Dope.
Amazing song about how like terrible New Year's is. So that was good.
Perfect timing.
Also, all right, my second one I'm going to put on is a track called Home and Away by 1-4, which is an Australian rap group.
Oh, the drill group.
Have you seen their documentary on Netflix?
Yeah, they're pretty good.
Yeah.
Their story's insane.
I really got into them when because I was out in Australia at the time. And it's just an interesting climate, like how much like the government just hates anything rap, like anything to do with that. Like actively, like the government actively suppressed them from playing shows to the point where like Kid Laroi was like their mate. And he basically had to like sneak them into his show.
That's crazy.
So just so they could get on stage. Otherwise, the police were going to shut it down. Through that documentary, I got into their music. So their track, Home and Away, that's a banger.
Yeah, no, they are good. And they've actually got a song with Kid Laroi that's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so very talented group. But yeah, Main Chapel Podcast. Thank you for coming on.
Appreciate it, man. Appreciate being here. It's fun.
Great episode. And until next time, peace.
Peace.
Elevate your summer with Osea's best-selling body care set. It's everything you need for radiant summer skin on the go. Featuring travel sizes of Osea's clean, vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral skincare, like their best-selling Undaria Algae Body Oil. Right now, you can get the best-seller's body care set, a $78 value, 33% off. and use code SUMMER to save an additional 10%. That's an additional 10% off at oceamalibu.com code SUMMER.